Accession number 19777, Reel 4.
Bill Norman, Reel 5.
Yes, he thought that the tank had ran over me and he was very upset, and there's me with my leg broken and in a pretty awful state everywhere else, saying to this tank driver, "Don't worry, I'm all right." And the poor old tank driver being consoled by me instead of him consoling me. Anyhow, I was put in an ambulance. And my pal Warner had lost some of his fingers and he was crippled too. And we set off on the ambulance and I looked down on the road. And we would see from time to time ambulances going and they were open at the back. And you'd see four pairs of feet on the stretchers, boots. If they were still, you knew they were all right. And if they were wobbling around, we thought, well, they're unconscious. And we'd say as we walked along, I used to say to my men, we were always covered in dust and thirsty, in awful state. When we were marching, I'd say, never mind. Just think of those poor devils in there. Think how lucky we are. Now I was one in the ambulance, and I was saying to Warner, oh, never mind. Think how lucky we are. Look at them poor devils out there at the fellas marching. So, we came to Alan Mayo. And a very nasty thing happened there. The place had been bombed and everyone was... A lot of casualties had been caused amongst the casualty clearing station. And I was put into a hollow piece of ground in case they came again. And an Indian came up to me and he said, have you any arms, you know? And he took my equipment and he started searching through it, putting things in his pocket. He was looting me. I said, hey, give me that stuff here. No, no, no. I said, well, pass me them, my ammunition pouches. And there was a grenade in there, and I thought, I'm going to take this grenade, and I'm going to pull the pin out, and I'm going to just throw it over there where I won't get any of it, and he will. And I was quite determined. I think I would have done it. But he could see through this, and he just laughed and carried on taking all what he wanted. And he threw me the empty pouches. That was the only nasty thing I ever saw, really. So, I'm taken aboard a paddle steamer. One of the Kipling's, the old flotilla. The boat was called the Carlo. And it was a paddle steamer with a great big paddle on the rear.
Excuse me, that Indian was a soldier, was he?
Yes. Yes, I think you were one of the medical people. I was on the Carlo, and we were all laid out in rows. I'd had no treatment at all. And where I was laid on the deck, there was bollards. So my stretcher stuck out from the rest. A path had been cleared between the stretchers, but my handles of mine stuck out a bit more. And as people came by, they would catch, their feet would catch the handles of my stretcher, and every time they did, I nearly went through the roof in pain. And I was lying there saying, don't mind the handles, don't mind the stretcher, don't kick them. And invariably they would, and I'd let out a yell. And all the time that this was going on, the fellas were moaning and groaning. The place was full of wounded. I think there was 300 casualties on that boat. and we were going up the Irrawaddy. Nobody treat us. There was nobody to. There were three nurses, really. One was an English nurse, and she always looked very smart and proper, and I never saw her. And then there was a Chinese one, and I saw her go up to a bloke and more or less ask him in what was wrong. And she had a bottle of iodine, and all she did was put iodine on his wounds, and he let out a scream. So I thought, you're not going to put iodine on me. I've been taught not to use iodine, to put a dry dressing on, let nature heal it. And that's what I was going to do. And when she came to me, I said, no, I'm okay, don't worry. And she went off, thank goodness. How long I was on that paddle steamer, I don't know. But luckily, one of the Dukes came along, and he was befriending everybody. We looked after each other. And there was very little food. I think I got a saucer of rice and a biscuit for a day's food. And fortunately, he would get water. And water is what we seemed to want. And then we pulled in at Mandalay. And we were evacuated. And while they're evacuating the stretchers, a jar came rolling towards me. And I stopped it and saw it was full of something called Heinz sandwich spread. Never seen it in my life. And it was half full. And I got to such a state that I hid it under my blanket for fear that somebody might come and claim it. When no one was looking, I ate it. It was wonderful stuff. And threw the jar away. They put us on Mandalay Station, and there were dead bodies all over the place. It had been badly bombed. And while the dogs were eating these bodies, and fellas were threw stones at one lying near me, at the dogs. And I saw one of these stones hit this body, which was, it was so rotten that the stone just sunk into it. We got on a train. Next morning we arrived at Mamio, British Military Hospital, in all its glory, with all the stones whitewashed. Everything ran in peacetime conditions. It was in various blocks linked together by verandas, and I was on the veranda. The light casualties were in the first block, the worser casualties in the next, the more serious in the next, and the bad ones in the end. And I was in the third one because I had a broken leg. I'd still had no treatment. And I was put into a bed with sheets, nice food. It was really good. And they said they couldn't put anything on my... They thought it might be fractured, my ankle, but they couldn't be quite sure because they had no X-ray machine, they had nothing, they had no plaster of Paris. So they put a splint on it. And that's all they could do, really. After a while, food came round, and I bribed the orderly. I noticed all these in the bad place couldn't eat their food, and it was coming back untouched. And I bribed the orderly with the 1 rupee that I had to give me all the bucksheet conner, the spare food. And he would stop and give me, every meal, he'd give me another one. So I was on double rations. And this was great. Now, I could eat anything, everything. If he'd have given me triple, I think I would have eaten it. After a while, I don't think I was there more than a week. The hospital was to be evacuated. and I was given a tin of, I think it was a tin of herrings I was given. We were all given a tin of something and a packet of biscuits, dumped on the train, and off we went towards Michener. And this was even worse than the boat, the paddle steamer. Except we did have doctors and nurses on it. But we were just packed in, and I was laid between the seats. I got my leg underneath a seat so people wouldn't touch it. Fellas had got dysentery, as they had on the boat, and there was no one to clean them up. So the place was in a terrible state and smelly, and I think we were on the train for best part of a week anyhow. Again, we ate what food we had, and then there was no more. And they dumped us just before Michener on the side of the railway. I was just laid down there. I found two pals who had been in the band with me. One was a fellow that went bomb happy, suffering from exhaustion. He was all right now. And the other one, he was all right. He'd had malaria. And they looked after me. And we kept together. And they said, oh, everybody's to be weighed. And I didn't know anything about this. And next morning, they were all talking about, cool, I didn't weigh much weight. I said, what do you mean, weighed? They said, we all like to get weighed in the night. I said, what, here in these fields? Yeah. A fellow with a foreign accent came, and he had us all weighed. And apparently what they were doing is they were putting them into jokes to put them on planes to get them away and just getting the weight right. I said, well, why wasn't I told? And we tried to wake you up. We woke you up. You said, I don't want to go. We told you what was happening. You said, I don't want to go back to India. I don't remember a thing about it. I think they woke me and I was just talking in my sleep. Anyhow, planes kept coming and going. There were Dakotas. And they were American Air Force. And when they stepped out, they were in clean, smart-looking uniforms. And there was us all grubby, covered in sores, dirty, filthy. And to see these fellas looking so good, you know, you couldn't believe it. He said, can't you evacuate us? And they said, no, we've got to go to Chongqing and we've got to do this and that. But they couldn't. And they promised they would try and get the RAF over. And eventually, an RAF bloke stood out in his blue uniform. And they jeered and booed him. The RAF weren't popular with us at all. Because in Burma, we never saw them. Except the time when they machine gunned us and shut up all our transport. They'd done a wonderful job, actually, before we ever got there, but we didn't know that. And this fella came out, and I think he was in tears, and he had World War I medal ribbons, I noticed. And he said that, look, he said, we've lost three planes trying to get to you, but you don't know what difficulty we have over this country. He said, we don't know it. He said, the Americans do. And he says, but I'm going back. And he said, no. He came over on an American plane. These Yanks had brought this fellow over. And he went back and he said, and I'll get you planes here somehow. And after a while, one came. And my pal out the band, who'd had malaria, was a sergeant. And he was the one in charge of organising a roll of men that he had to go on this plane. So he stuck me on the end of the roll. He wrote my name on it to help me out. And we got to the plane and there was an Indian officer, a Sikh, in charge. He was seeing them on the plane and he had rolls too. And he was a wonderful man. He really was a first-class officer. And he spoke very good English. And he had everybody under his control. And when they're going up on the plane, it came to me, and my name wasn't on his list, so he wouldn't let me on the plane. So Johnny, my sergeant, says, "He's been missed off." "Yes, he's on the list, look. He's been missed off at the end." So the Sikh said, "Wait there." And he said to the pilot, "How many are you allowed on this plane?" He says, 26. "But they've no equipment. I'll take 30. And when he wasn't looking, the old Sikh slipped another 3 on, including me. And we got onto the plane. The pilot turned around and counted us and said, "Right, there's 3 too many, 3 off. This plane's not going till the 3 got off." And the officer said, "I want 3 volunteers to get off, and I'll guarantee you, you'll be on the next plane." And I was just going to get up and thought, well, this will have to be me. When 3 got off and went, so I kept quiet. We flew northwards for only less than half an hour, and we were in Assam, a place called Tinsukia. We were taken out of the plane, dumped on the floor, and left. The plane went off again. Eventually, an officer came up to us, very clean and smart. He says, "Who the hell are you?" And some senior rank said, "Oh, we've come from Burma, sir." "Why are you so filthy? Why are your men in such a bad state and yourself?" And we just laughed. I said, "Excuse me, sir." He said, "We've come out of Burma." He said, "We've not been fed for days." He said, "These men are all wounded." And he said, "Can you get us some food? We need food." And this fella says, "Oh," he said, "I can't feed you. You're not on our ration strength." And we couldn't believe this. And then it dawned on the officer that what was wrong. And he said, "I'll do something." And he did. And he couldn't have done better for us. It just that they had no idea what was going on. And he told us, "You can stay here until we get a proper train organised, or we can dump you on an empty train going into India and hope for the best." We hoped for the best and got dumped on the train. And were given 20 rupees. As we set off, they phoned down the line and asked the local population to a train of wounded coming down. There could only have been 30 of us. "Will you feed them?" And as we got the stations, the tea planters and generally the white and the Indians would turn out and they'd have food ready for us. And you might get a sandwich, and you might get one place we had roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. And this went on for about, I think we were on the train for about a week, till we eventually arrived at Bareilly. And there we were taken off and put into a barracks, which had turned into a hospital. The most wonderful place I ever went to. It was a hospital that was on its way to Singapore, got diverted and set up there to take in the Burma casualties, where we were all well treated, paid, kitted out, and those of us that were all right, we were sent off to a reinforcement camp in Lucknow, which was another horrific place where people didn't understand. And where, like the rest of the army, we were treated very, very badly. The attitude towards us was terrible. They looked upon us as though we were all deserters, I think, that we had lost Burma. We wouldn't fight. And the attitude was so bad that I think General Slim took it up and marched his men past the general in the bad state they were in, just to show them what a rough time we'd had. And I think that'll be the end of Burma as far as I'm concerned. I could go on a bit more, but I won't.
Were you with the Dukes when you entered the Korean War?
Yes. When the war ended, I was in the commandos, and we were in Italy, and we came home to go to the Far East, but the atomic bomb was dropped, and the number two commando, which was mine, split up, and those of us had any time to do in the army, we went to number four in Germany, which I thought was wonderful. I liked Germany, and I got on well with the Germans. Anyhow, they were disbanding, and I thought, right, I'm only a private. I'd had to revert from sergeant to private in order to get in the commandos. And I asked to be RTU'd, return to unit, and to go back to the Duke of Wellington's band. So they sent me. Eventually I got back, and I was in the band at Halifax. I didn't like it, so I got out of that and went to duty and got myself a job of weapon training. I didn't want to be chasing recruits about. It wasn't my way of life. Then they broke up, and I went to the Territorials at Halifax, Huddersfield. And this, for the first time in my life, I got in contact with civilians. And I joined the local rifle club, which I'm still a member. And I joined the Huddersfield Philharmonic. And I thought this was wonderful. And I was lucky enough to be first flute for a long time. And I decided, I met up with others, that I'd leave the army and go to the College of Music at Manchester. And this was all going to take place, but the Korean War broke out, and I couldn't get out of the army. So I thought, oh, well, doesn't matter. I'll go when they release me. This won't last long. Now, I'd fought in Burma, on northwest frontier of India, and where else? In Italy and in Korea. Korea was different to all the other wars. Well, each one was different. The northwest frontier was very different to Burma, where we were thrown in, and Burma was different to Italy, and Italy was very different to Korea. It was a moving war to start with, but by the time we got there, it was static. Very much like World War One, and we were in trenches. The enemy were usually a good distance away, about 800 to 600 yards at the most, at the least, I should say. And I know at one time they were so far we couldn't even reach them with our mortars. However, when I went back to the regiment, the way I got back, I happened to be at Bisley shooting. I was attached to the Territorials at the time. And this is something I was always wanted to do, to go to Bisley. I met up with the regimental shooting team. And the Colonel Bunbury, no, sorry, he was a major then. He wanted me to come and be part of his team at Strensel. And I said, no, I'm not going back there, sir. When you reform as a battalion, I will do. Because they were just training recruits. And a few months later, he contacted me and he says, right, we are reforming. Come back and I'll make you intelligence sergeant. So I said, okay. So I went back. In no time, we went to the 6th Armoured Div, I think it was, in Germany. But I still thought, well, I'm going to go to the College of Music. So I went back to the band. But I hardly ever played with them, simply because I was out with the shooting team all the time and training the shooting team. One day, we were called for a regimental talk by the colonel. All the sergeants blew the double and everyone had to be in the gymnasium by 8 o'clock, and we were there. And the colonel, to everyone's surprise, said, "We are going to go to Korea." So I dashed round to his office, which I had the privilege of doing, being in the shooting team. The colonel was now Bunbury, the shooter. And he said, "Oh, I haven't time to talk shooting, Norman." And I says, I said, "It's not a shooting team I want to talk about, it's this other lot." And he said, "Oh, you want to come with us?" And I said, "Yes." He guessed right. He says, "Right, you'll be intelligence sergeant." I went out and bumped into Captain Blakey, Bill Blakey. He was much of a playboy type. I always thought that Bill would either get the Victoria Cross or a court-martial. And he was a bit worried. And he says, "What do you think of this lot?" And I said, "Oh, great, I'm going." And he said, "Well, he said, I haven't got anybody there. I've only got one NCO, one sergeant. He should have had four and about six corporals." He said, "I don't know what I'm going to do." I said, "Well, sir, if you can fix it with the colonel, I'll come to the mortars. I'm very up to date with them." I was, until I went back into the band. And so that was decided upon on condition that I went sniping. Well, that suited me as well.
Why were you so keen to go to Korea?
I didn't want to leave the battalion, I think. If they're going to go to Korea, then they weren't going to go without me. And I think it was just an adventure. It just happened that I had seen a lady in the town who I thought was nice, and I'd like to get to know her and with serious intentions. And I was taking her out that very night for the first time. Anyhow, that all worked out well, and she's now my wife. We went back to Pontefract, reorganised some months later, and we set off from Liverpool, I think it was September 1952, on a ship called the Devonshire, an old type of troop ship with hammocks and everything. And it was a terrible ship. It had a list of starboard. It was terrible by standards of people that didn't know troop ships. But I knew them pretty well. And it took us 5 weeks to get there. We ran into a tremendous typhoon in China, in the China Sea. Everybody was seasick, except me. And the only reason I wasn't is I discovered quells. I always was seasick normally, but this time no. And we landed at Pusan, and the first thing that greeted us was an American Negro band marching up and down the dockside. Oh, I just shouldn't say marching, they just jazzed up there. They were all jazzing along like you can just imagine Negroes. And we thought this was hilarious and all laughed like anything at them. We got in a train and we went up to some place. And there we were to relieve the